Boker Tov, it's a pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Dr. Marty Lukshin. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to introduce him in any of the talks he gave before because I was teaching a chat. It's what I, my other hat that I teach, and the grade 12 classes are over, so I don't have to teach at 10:40, but I do have to teach at 11:40 today, so I'll be leaving a little early, but it's a pleasure to have Rabbi Dr. Lukshin back. We, of course, go back a long time in Toronto, and Baruch Hashem, he's now living in Yerushalayim, a professor for many years at York University, of course, the world's expert on Rashbam, and he had a wonderful series, even though I missed them, I listened to them afterwards on Parshanut, and he suggested we move to Tamei HaMikra for the time being, and then we'll take it from there, and it's a pleasure to welcome everybody to the first part of four on Tamei HaMikra, or Tamei HaMitzvot.
Tamei HaMitzvot.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, Vakasha, it's all yours. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wonderful to be back here again. I thought that I'd begin with an insight that I learned many years ago from a colleague of mine at York University, who some of you might know. I know a lot of you are in Toronto, and some of you might have known Professor Saul Tannenzapf, Zichrono Livracha. I was talking with Professor Tannenzapf one day about Tamei HaMitzvot and about how frustrating it is that so many of the mitzvot, we just don't know what the reasons are behind them. And Professor Tannenzapf said to me, well, actually, for a class that I once did, I went through the Torah and I counted up how many mitzvot have a reason for them. And I don't remember what his count was, but I think it was somewhere between 70 and 80 mitzvot have a reason that's given in the Torah about why you should be observing it. And Professor Tannenzapf said to me, furthermore, when you read the Criminal Code of Canada, how often does it tell you what the reason for a law is? And I assume that that's the case in the laws of any country. They tell you what the law is. Here's what you're supposed to do. Here's what you're not allowed to do. And it doesn't say why. And that, in fact, from one perspective, the Torah actually gives a lot of reasons for the mitzvot. We will still deal with, in this series of classes, we will deal with the frustration that many people feel about many mitzvot that we can't see any specific ta'am for them. But just to put it in a framework and notice that the Torah actually does provide reasons for many of the mitzvot. And just to give a couple of examples here, some mitzvot with reasons in the Torah. Ki tivne bayit chadash va'asita ma'akeh legagecha v'lo tasim damim beveitecha ki yipol hanofel mimenu. When you build a new house, you should make a parapet, a kind of railing or wall around the roof so that you do not bring blood guilt on your home if anyone should fall from it. So here's a mitzvah taseh, something that you're supposed to do, and it tells you why to do it, because it's to save human lives. So it's telling you why to do it. So that's I think that like the simplest kind of reason for a mitzvah. Here is a clear benefit that you will get from observing this mitzvah. You won't kill anybody. Good. Okay. But we also notice that there are many other kinds of reasons that are given for a mitzvah. For example, the claim that appears a few times in the Torah, Ke'ezrach mikem yeh lachem hager hagar yitchem v'ahavta lo kamocha ki gerim heyitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. The stranger who resides with you should be with you as one of your citizens. You should love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. This is an attempt to give a reason for the mitzvah, but the reason is not, you know, it just isn't made all that clear what the reason is. Okay, we were once strangers, and that's why we should be nice to strangers. You know, the logic there is not spelled out. There's a cause that's explained. You know, at other times in the Torah, it says, "Va'atem yidatem et nefesh hager," you know what it's like to be a stranger, and that's why you should be nice to a stranger. And the commentators argue about, you know, what does it mean to say that the reason that we are told that we have to be nice to the stranger is because we once were a stranger. But whether it's a clear explanation or not, there is an attempt to give a reason, to give a kind of encouragement. I see on the chat that somebody said that the comparison to the criminal code is not fair because the criminal code has laws that are always logical, like don't kill and don't do this and don't do that. I'm not so sure that I would go along with that. I think that there are, you know, when I come to a street and I see that in one block you're allowed to park and in the other block you're not allowed to park, and I'm standing there scratching my head and trying to figure out what's the difference between one block and another block, and nowhere does it explain why I am allowed to park in this block and I'm not allowed to park, but, you know, I observe the law without knowing what the reason is for the law, and I know that there are consequences if I don't observe the law. So there are many laws that in Canada, in the United States, in Israel, that it's very hard to know what the reason for the law is. It's possible if you go back through the city council minutes and you see the discussions, then you might figure out what the reason is. But I'm sure as many of you who have studied law know, the whole question about whether you ought to be looking to figure out when there's a law that comes, when there's a case that comes before a court in Canada, in the United States, in Israel, should the court be looking to see what the idea behind the law is? Should they be looking for, we will see in a future session, we will see, should they be darshin antama dekra? Should they be looking to try to figure out what was the idea when the legislator made up this law? What was the legislator trying to accomplish? And then saying, well, does that reasoning fit in this specific situation? That's a big dispute in legal circles about whether you ought to be doing that when you're looking at legal codes. So, okay, so here's a different kind of explanation of a reason. Moving on to another example. Okay. Ushmartem et ha-matzot ki be'etzem hayom hazeh otzeti et tzivotechem me'eretz Mitzrayim. You should observe the matzot, or you should observe perhaps the chag of ha-matzot. Two ways of understanding this. Why? For on this very day, I brought your ranks out of the land of Egypt. So that's, again, the Torah trying to give a reason. It doesn't just say, on the following days, you eat matzah. As you know, when you open up the Shulchan Aruch or the Mishnah Brura, like most law codes, they don't provide reasons. And the Torah is often providing reasons of this nature, telling you this is based on the fact that I brought you out of Egypt. Does this mean that I'm supposed to do this because the Torah wants me to remember that I came? Perhaps there could be other ways of understanding that also. And then another motivation, depends what you mean by reason, of course, but another reason could be that you will benefit from observing the laws, and if you don't observe the laws, you will suffer. That's a reason, that's a ta'am for the mitzvah. It doesn't tell you why the legislator. So the question is, are we trying to figure out why the legislator legislated this law? And the first one here that we had here, the legislator, the Torah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, doesn't want us to be responsible for the death of any human being. Okay, that we understand. That's an explanation, a reason that gives you what the idea behind it was. These next two examples, not that clear. Perhaps that's what it's doing. Not certain that that's what it's doing. And then we look at honor your father and your mother, that you may long endure on the land that the Lord your God is assigning to you. That's one translation of Leman Yarichun Yamecha. It just means you will live a long time. So this is, if I'm looking for the reason why I should be honoring my parents, it's because if I honor my parents, I will live for a long time. So is that the Is that the reason why I'm honoring my parents? No, it's not. It's not like the reason that the Kadosh Baruch Hu said that that you should be honoring your parents, but it's something. It's addressing me and telling me why I should be doing this. I just thought that I just begin with one surprising text from the literature of Ta'amei HaMitzvot from a very unknown Bible commentator, but very interesting Bible commentator named Rabbi Nissim of Marseille, who lived in the 14th century. He was a Talmid Chacham, he was a philosopher, he was a physician, and he provides a new spin on what Lema'an Yarichun Yamecha actually means. He says, Natan ta'am Lema'an Yarichun Yamecha ki b'mida shemadad lehorav ba modedim lo. He's reusing the Talmudic phrase, b'mida shadam moded modedim lo, the behavior that you give to others will come back to you. Yitachen shiyu banav modedim lo ubesof yamav ye'azruhu ye'achiluhu ve'yashkuhu uvaze ye'arichun yamav retzoni shelo yamut belo et velo ye'ktsar yamim mechesron parnasa o mechesron mi sheyishamshuhu. The text provides the reason so that your days will be long. Why? Because the measure that you extend to your parents will be extended to you. It's possible. We all think it's possible that perhaps our children will notice the way that we treated our parents. And perhaps once we start needing the help of our children, then our children will say, oh, well, I remember that my father and my mother took care of their parents when they needed help. And so, in other words, Rav Nissim of Marseille is saying that this it's providing you with an explanation of the benefit that you will derive from observing the mitzvah of kibud av va'im. It's possible that if you set a good model of how you perform the mitzvah of kibud av va'im, perhaps you will benefit because your children will also take care of you and you won't die young because there's nobody there to take care of you. I see the chat has been jumping here, and I'm going to take a look at it and before I go on to the next idea here and see if there are any questions that I can address. Okay. We have some long comments here. Halakha is absolute justice, spiritual good. King's law is utility and political order, right? And for Sadia, it's because you will be with them for a while, correct? Secular law is based on the greater good. Maybe, I hope, in a good democracy, it'll be based on greater good. Although we all know stories about people making deals with local politicians and things like that. It's supposed to be based on the greater good, which is the Torah law is often based on purposes of moral and spiritual elevation. Right. Okay. I'm going to go on and the assumption that there aren't very many Ta'amei HaMitzvot in the Bible is based on a famous passage from the Gemara that talks about this text in Sefer Dvarim that gives you the rules of the king. Som tasim alecha melech, which I was interested to see that the New Jewish Publication Society translation translates as, you shall be free to set a king over yourself. They don't see it as Chazal see it as being a mitzvah, that there's a mitzvah to set up a king, one chosen by the Lord your God. Rak lo yarbe lo susim, v'lo yashiv adam mitzrayim aleman harbot sus, Vashem amar lachem lo tosifun lashub baderech hazeh od, v'lo yarbe lo nashim, v'lo yasur lo avo, v'chesef ezahav, v'lo yarbe lo ma'od. He shouldn't keep too many horses, so that he doesn't send the people back to Egypt to add to his horses. That's where horses came from back in those days. They came from Egypt. And so the king shouldn't have too many horses, because God does not want there to be a strong connection between the Jewish state in Eretz Yisrael and Egypt. The Lord has warned you, you shouldn't go back that way again. And he also should not have too many wives, lest his heart go astray, nor shall he amass silver and gold to excess. They shouldn't have too much money. That one they don't give a reason for. I guess maybe everybody can figure out on their own why kesef zahav lo yarbeh lo ma'od, because where is he going to get that kesef zahav from? He's going to get them from us, from the from his underlings. But there's a reason given here why he shouldn't have too many horses, and there's a reason given here why he shouldn't have too many wives. And the Gemara commenting on this says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, mipnei ma lo nitgalu ta'amei Torah? Why were the reasons for Torah commandments not revealed? Why? Maybe I'll just read this in English to save time. Those of you who want to can follow the Hebrew, because the reasons for two of them were revealed, and the greatest in the world, King Solomon, failed in those matters. It is written, he shall not have many wives, lest his heart go astray. Solomon said, I will have many, but my heart will not go astray. He said, oh, okay, so the Torah explains what's the idea behind it. It's not really that having many wives is in and of itself a problem. It's just that it might lead to another problem. And so King Solomon said, okay, I understand what the reason is. And so I will just be sure that my heart does not go astray. And he tried to outsmart the Torah. The Torah gave, it explained what the reason was. And then later it is written, it came to pass when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart away. And it's also written, he shall not keep many horses. And Solomon said, I will accumulate many horses, but I will not send the people back to Egypt. And it's written, describing King Shlomo, that a chariot went out and went to Egypt and brought, and so he started a horse trade with the Egyptians, when the Torah said that we are not supposed to do this. And so I remember I once studied this text with Nochama Leibovich, who pointed out something that's important to point out about this text. Maybe everybody realizes this already, but not sure that I did until Nochama pointed it out. She said, this text doesn't say that there aren't reasons for every one of the mitzvot in the Torah. It's just saying, lo nitgalu, they were not revealed. And that's one of the questions that we're going to be looking at in the continuation of the session today. Not immediately, but soon we'll be looking at the question of, are there really ta'amim that one can find? Is it possible that there aren't any ta'amim, that there aren't any explanations? This text doesn't take a stand on it. All it is saying is that the Torah twice explained what the reason was, and a problem ensued because of people who think that when they know the reason, they know whether they know they can decide whether they are going to keep the law or not. I'm sure that people's minds, like everybody's minds these days, when they talk about laws, are thinking about the laws related to Corona, and we're all trying to figure out, you know, do we try to figure out what's the goal? What's this law trying to accomplish? And can I figure out some other way of avoiding the transmission of Corona without following the law precisely the way it is? And so here there's a bit of a commercial saying, like, don't be a smart aleck. Don't figure out that you're able on your own once you know what the reason is behind the law. And this is one of the reasons why people oppose Ta'amei HaMitzvot. We will see this as we go on, but just, you know, hinting at things that we will see in the continuation, giving Ta'amei HaMitzvot is controversial, and sometimes it leads to problems. You know, Rambam says that in the Moreh Nevuchim that the reason that the Torah forbids eating pork is because it's unhealthy. And presumably, you know, Rambam was a physician, and presumably he was reflecting the understanding that physicians had back then. And I don't think that that's what physicians are teaching right now, that it's unhealthy to be eating pork. And so there is a problem here. You know, here, this text is saying there's a problem because somebody might try to outsmart the reason, even when the Torah says, so the Torah gives the reason for the law. So that's the correct reason for the law. Fine. But once a human being gives the reason, and if the reason is proven afterwards not to be correct, then that that's going to cause people not to observe the law. Okay. So this is, I'd say, the core text on the issue in the Talmud. I thought I'd just, because Rabbi Lamb just passed away, I thought I'd just share a little text of his that I've always liked about Ta'amei HaMitzvot in his book, A Hedge of Roses. After he tries to explain what the reasons are behind the rules of Taharat HaMishpacha, he writes as follows. We are attempting to fathom the purposes as opposed to the reasons inherent and implicit in the commandments and the precepts. I think what he means here is we're trying to figure out what the benefits are of, you know, when I wrote what I think is beneficial in Taharat HaMishpacha and family purity laws, I'm not really saying that that's the reason for it. I'm not saying that that's why the Kadosh Baruch Hu made the law. I'm saying that these are benefits that you will get. In other words, we want to know not why God commanded them, but what he wanted us to learn from them. In other words, the function of the commandments in the larger horizons of our life. It is, of course, understood that taken in this light, the laws are independent of the purposes we find in them. For a law to be a law, it must be autonomous and not contingent on our rationalizations. That's a strong statement. If something is a law, it is a law not because of our rationalizations, but because it has some autonomous status as a law. And then he goes on to make a sweet linguistic point, which I go back and forth about whether I really like this linguistic point. But anyways, he says, Ta'amei HaMitzvot literally means the tastes of the mitzvot. The translation, the reasons for the mitzvot, he says, is derivative, secondary. That's a secondary thing. And what does it mean to say that Ta'amei HaMitzvot is like the taste of the mitzvot? By inquiring into our religious institutions for their relevant purposes, we seek to add delightful and satisfying flavor to our spiritual diet. But in no way may we substitute the taste for the substance of our religious foods, namely the actual precepts of Judaism carried out in practice. So we do Ta'amei HaMitzvot because it's the spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down. That once you, it's easier to observe a mitzvah when you feel that there is something beneficial coming to you from this mitzvah. And just to be clear, what is the context in which Rabbi Lamb wrote this line? After he gave his explanation of the idea behind the laws of family purity, the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, and he says, following on a Gemara that actually makes this same point, that it builds excitement into a marriage, that when there's periodic abstinence and the wife goes to the mikveh and comes home, it's just like the wedding day again, and the excitement comes back into the marriage. And Rabbi Lamb knows that somebody might say, Rabbi Lamb, that's very nice, but my spouse and I have figured out other ways of having excitement in our marriage. And we don't feel that we need this. Somebody might say, oh, we have such a close relationship that it's not a concern. So I understand that other people might need this law. And so after giving this, I think, very nice apology for the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, this defense of the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, he backs off and says, this is the tam in the sense of the taste of the mitzvah. It makes it more, it makes it easier for you to swallow this mitzvah, but it isn't really the reason behind it. And kind of behind this approach of Rabbi Lam is the approach that many Jewish thinkers have had over the years, which is we don't know what the approach, what the idea is behind law X or behind law Y, and that's why we observe it precisely as it is without looking at the ta'am, without looking to find out what it is that God was trying to accomplish by having a mitzvah of this nature. So this is the tension that we will be looking at here. I will again take a fast look at the chat and see if there is okay. Rambam states this explicitly. Yes, we're going to see. We're going to see. Somebody says that I'm not correct about the Rambam saying this about pork. Well, I think that I am, and I think that I can show the text in the Rambam where he says it. He says how filthy it is, and all you have to do is go to France and see the way people live and see how awful it is that people are eating pork, and he does put it in terms of health. And if he doesn't, Rashbam does put it in terms of health benefits. People think that Rambam was the first person to argue that kashrut was for health reasons. Before Rambam, Rashbam wrote that kashrut was for health reasons. Yes. Okay. Okay. Somebody is asking that I wait to the end to deal with comments in the chat. Maybe I will do that. Thank you for the suggestion. Okay. So, what do most of our commentators think about the question of whether we are going to be able to find ta'amim in the mitzvot? So Rashi, commenting on the verse about Abraham, Ekev asher shama Abraham bekoli vayishmor mishmarti mitzvotai chukotai betorotai. Rashi, following Chazal, in saying that Abraham observed the entire Torah, and even observed the Torah Shebaal Peh, even observed the things that were to Rabbanan, he goes through this this verse, phrase by phrase, Shama Abraham Bekoli Kishenisiti Oto. That's a reference to the Akedah or to the other nine tests of Abraham. And he kept my charge. This refers to precautionary measures which are intended to make us avoid the infringement of biblical prohibitions. This is mishmarti, means mitzvot de rabbanan. Mitzvotai, what does mitzvotai mean? Those matters which, had they not been written in the Torah, we would nevertheless hold that they are fitting matters to be the subject of a commandment, such as robbery and murder. That's what mitzvotai means. And then Rashi says about chukotai, we all learned this back in Hebrew school or in day school. What does chukotai mean? Rashi says, there are two gersoot in Rashi, either dvarim sheyetzer hara ve'umota olam mishivim aleihem, or perhaps just in the haketer, and in other good editions, it just says, Dvarim she yetzer hara meshiv aleihem, matters which our evil inclination argue against the necessity of prohibiting. We have this yetzer hara inside of us that's saying to us, why should I observe this law? And he gives examples, kagon, achilat chazir, eating pork, ulevishat sha'adnez, She'ein tam badavar, ela gzerat hamelech v'chukotav al avadav. Things for which there are no reasons, but which are the king's decrees and enactments imposed on his subjects. Often when I'm preparing texts for a session like this, I go to the web where I can find a translation of Rashi, and then I play with it. And the translation of Rashi that I found on the web here translated the phrase here, She'ein ta'am badavar, as things for which there are no apparent reasons. But that's not what Rashi said here. He says, Ein ta'am ba'davar. Those are pretty simple Hebrew words. He's saying there isn't a reason for it. Ela gezerat ha-melech v'chukotav al avadav. And then Torotai in the plural, because it means even the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And Rashi repeats this. It's not that maybe he just slipped up here and said ein ta'am badavar. He says this also in his commentary here on Et Chukotai Tishmoru Behem Techa Lo Tarbia Kilayim. He says Chukim Heim Elek Zerat Ha'Melech. There's no reason for this. So he likes that formulation. Rashi's source is probably the Gemara in Yoma here, where it says, you shall observe my mishpatim. This is a reference to matters that even if they hadn't been written, it would have been logical that they should be written there. The prohibitions against idol worship, prohibited sexual relations, bloodshed, theft, and cursing God. It's an interesting list of the things that Rashi sees, or the Gemara sees, sorry, as being logical that we would have come up with on our own. But what are chukotai? It's a reference to matters that Satan challenges, that ha-Satan meshiv aleihem, and they are a list similar to the list that Rashi gave in his commentary that we just saw, the prohibitions against eating pork or wearing shadnez, performing the chalitza ceremony with a yevama, the purification ceremony of a leper, the scapegoat. And lest you say these are meaningless acts, but the Gemara finishes off, Shema tomar ma'ase tohu heim, tamud lomar, ani Hashem chakakti, ve'en lecha reshut leharher bahem. So these are, in case you think that they are meaningless, that they are tohu, they aren't. They are something that God decreed, and you aren't allowed to doubt them, you aren't allowed to question them, but is the Gemara saying that there is no reason for it? I don't think that the Gemara is saying that there's no reason for it, but it looks as if Rashi, both in the previous text here, where he writes, Ein ta'am badavar, and in this next text here, in Vayikra Yotet, on Et Chukotai Tishmor with Kilayim, he also says, Chukim heim elu gzerat melech she'ein ta'am ladavar, things that have no reason. And I'm not the first person to read Rashi this way. Ramban read Rashi this way. Ramban read Rashi, and then Ramban quoted Rashi's comment, and he quoted the Gemara, and he explains that what the Gemara is saying is that she'yeh hatam ne'elam, that the reason isn't known. And then Ramban writes, Ve'ein hakavana bahem shetie gzerat melech malchei hamalachim b'shum makom b'lo ta'am. The rabbis never intended to say that any decree of the King of Kings would be without a reason. That this idea of suggesting that there's a law that doesn't have a reason, and that you should be perfectly happy with this idea, you should just know this law doesn't have any reason. Ramban doesn't like that idea. We're going to say more about Ramban's attitude to Ta'amei HaMitzvot in a future session, but in the meantime, we see that Ramban doesn't like this approach. Okay. Just because, as Rabbi Kelman said, because Rashbam is at the center of my intellectual interests, I just point out, although it's not all that relevant to our major theme here of Ta'amei HaMitzvot, when Rashbam looked at this same verse that Rashi divided up into mitzvot and chukim, when he looked at Abraham observed the mishmeret, the mitzvot, the chukim, and the torot, when Rashbam looked at it, he says, okay, Echev asher shama Abraham b'koli ala akedah, because it says there in the akedah, Ekev asher shama Avraham, Ekev asher shamata bekoli at the end of the Akedah. So this is resonating with the phrase in the Akedah. Vaishmor mishmarti is a reference to milah, to circumcision. Rashbam is trying to find things that Avraham observed without the midrash of saying that Avraham observed all of the mitzvot that hadn't been given yet. But if you look through Avraham's life, you see that he observed various things that are connected with the word Ekev, and that are connected with the word Mishmeret, and that are connected with the word Mitzvot, my commandments, in other words, like the rule that circumcision takes place on the eighth day of life, because it says, Kasher Tziva Oto Elohim. But then Rashbam gets stuck when he reaches the words Chukotai V'Torotai, because those words do not appear in the Abraham narrative. All the words until now did appear in the Abraham narrative, but not Chukotai V'Torotai. And Rashbam says, according to the true plain meaning of scripture, Lefi Ikar Pshuto, this refers to all the well-accepted laws, like theft, adultery, covetousness, civil laws, hospitality for guests, all of which were observed before the giving of the Torah, but were repeated and elaborated to the Israelites at Har Sinai, where they entered into a covenant to fill them. But notice what Rashbam has done here. He's saying so. God is saying about Avraham that he observed God's words in the test of the Akedah and in Brit Milah and in circumcising his son on the eighth day. And then he also observed various laws that are part of the common law of civilized people in the world. Civilized people in the world know that you observe laws like this. But notice that he's saying this about Chukotai, that Rashbam does not accept the whole idea. Again, that I'm sorry to be going against what we all learned back in Hebrew school or in day school, that Chukotai means laws that either don't have a reason for them, or that Chukotai might mean laws that do have a reason for them, but we don't know what the reason is for that law. Rashbam doesn't accept that. And modern Bible scholars also say that Chukotai does not necessarily mean a law that doesn't have a reason to it, and that Rashbam is very comfortable saying that Chukotai could be referring here to the well-accepted laws like welcoming guests, civil laws, observing the civil laws, refraining from theft and adultery. Those things are categorized by Rashbam as Chukotai, despite the fact that Chazal like to use that word Chukotai to describe rules for which either there aren't any reasons or we don't know what the reasons are. Okay, so what does Rambam have to say about this subject? Rambam has many things to say about this subject. I'll read this in English just to save time. At the end of Hilchot Me'ilah, he says, "It is fitting for people to meditate on the laws of the Holy Torah and to comprehend their full meaning to the extent of his ability." You should try to figure out what the laws, it's a good thing to try to figure out what is standing behind the laws of the Torah. Nevertheless, a law for which they find no reason and understand no cause should not be trivial in their eyes. They shouldn't say, oh, I found this law here and I can't see any reason for it. You shouldn't dismiss the law because of that. How much more should people be on guard not to rebel against the commandment decreed for us by the Blessed Holy One only because they do not understand its reason? Shelo yeda ta'aman. Rambam is still understanding that there is a ta'am. He says, so he's saying an idea that seems similar to what Rashi said, except in the sense that Rambam definitely feels that the mitzvot do have ta'amim, as we will see in further texts of his, although we will see one text that does not seem to go along with this, but we'll try to figure out what Rambam is saying about this. So far, all he is saying, if you can't figure out what the ta'am is, don't let that be trivial, and don't say that you're not going to observe that law because you couldn't figure out what the ta'am is. He says, המשפטים הן המצוות שטעמם גלוי וטובת עשייתן בעולם הזה ידועה כגון איסור גזע ושפיכות דמים וכיבוד אב ואם. Okay, so he says, משפטים are things that everybody is able to figure out why they are good things to do, like the rule against theft, and the rule against murder, and the rule that you should honor your parents. He says that those are things that don't need any explanation. Maybe I'll just pause for a second and tell a little story that I once learned from Nechama Leibovitch. For those of you who did not have the pleasure of studying with Nechama Leibovitch, she was one of the world's greatest raconteurs. And she once told the story that in the beginning of her career, when she was teaching in some elementary school, there was a theft that took place in the elementary school, and they gathered all the students together for an assembly, and they brought in a policeman, and the policeman gave a speech to the students about how terrible theft is. And the policeman got up there, Nechama said, that he got up there and said, you know, you might think that you can get away with theft. And I'll tell you the truth, that 9 out of 10 times when somebody steals something, they don't get caught. But I want you to know that if you steal something now, you will look upon yourself for all of your life as being a thief. Think about that. You will look upon yourself as being a thief. And Nechama says that she, after the assembly was over, she went up to the policeman and said, did you really think that that was the best way to motivate people not to be thieves by saying that, you know, you'll hate yourself for the rest of your life if you do it? And she said, the policeman said to her, what do you do here in the school? And she said, I teach Tanakh. And the policeman said to her, well, why don't you do what you're good at and teach Tanakh? And I'll do what I'm good at, and I'll try to explain to people why they shouldn't steal. So I think there's more than one opinion about what a good way of explaining to people why they shouldn't steal. But Rambam says that that's one of the things, ta'aman yadua, tovat asiya, or at least, yes, ta'aman galui, the reason is clear, and tovat asiyatan ba'olam hazeh yidua, and everybody can figure out what benefit is derived from something like this. On the other hand, what is a chok? Ein hamitzvot she'ein ta'aman yadua. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have an explanation, but it's saying that we don't know what the explanation is, just as Ramban said. Amru chachamim, chukim chakti lecha, ve'en lecha reshut laharher bahem, yitzro shel adam nokfo bahem, v'umot ha'olam mishivin alehem, kigon isur basar chazir, u'basar b'chalav, ve'gla rufa, u'farah aduma, u'sirah mishtalech. Not precisely the same list that we saw before, but a very similar list. And he says there are two problems there with these rules. People, a little voice inside of people, their Yetzer Hara says to them, I don't have to listen to this because there's no obvious reason for it. But he also makes it clear, and we will see this in future sessions, that a lot of Tamei HaMitzvot is because of a lot of the reasons why people got involved in Tamei HaMitzvot over the years was because Umot HaOlam Mishivin Aleihem. Because the Gentiles would argue and say, look at this Torah, it doesn't make any sense. We'll talk about the Gentile argument and the defense against the Gentile argument in a future session, but this just introduces to us the topic. Okay. Rambam writes in the Guide of the Perplexed, that he has met people. There are people who feel that it is a grievous matter to provide reasons for any mitzvah. There are people who are against Ta'amei HaMitzvot. And, you know, I mentioned some of the arguments against Ta'amei HaMitzvot beforehand, and we'll see more, but now he's going to give us another potential argument against Ta'amei HaMitzvot. He said, what they would prefer would be that there would be no understandable aspect of any mitzvah or prohibition. That would be best for them if all of the mitzvot did not have any understandable aspect. Now, Rambam puts his cards on the table right away, and in case you think that maybe he likes this approach, he writes, what brings them to this position is a sickness that they have in their souls, one that they cannot articulate and that they do not really understand. Only sick people think this way, and they don't even understand what the sickness is. They think that if the mitzvot actually accomplish something in this world, and that is why they were commanded to us, then it would be as if these laws originated from some human mind. That if you find some logic behind the mitzvah, well, logic is something that we human beings strive towards doing. And that one of the comments of the chat that I looked at before said, you know, the laws in Canada and the United States and Israel, they're, you know, for the common good, that people are analyzing what the common good is. But that's not what the Torah is. The Torah is, it's from God. And so using the tool of logic to analyze the Torah is not going to work. Then it would be as if these laws originated from some human mind. Rambam goes on, but if a law has no rational basis for it and leads to no particular goal, then it certainly originates from God, as no human being would ever suggest something like that. Now, you read a law and you say, this does not make any sense. I really don't like this law. It goes against logic. Well, then that's a sign that the law is divine, because you're not divine. You're not God. You don't understand how God, and no human being would ever suggest something like that. When I was 19 years old and I started studying in a yeshiva, in Yeshivat Merkaz HaRav, I remember one day, in my first days in the yeshiva, I encountered something in the Gemara that really bothered me. It went against all of my moral fibers. It was one of the many laws that discriminate against Gentiles that one can find in the Gemara. And I remember going up to one of the older boys in the yeshiva. In the yeshiva, we didn't normally go with our questions to the rabbis. We went to the older guys who had been there for a while. And I remember posing this question, saying how troubled I was by this rule in the Gemara. And I remember this older yeshiva bacher saying to me, well, consider maybe this is a sign of the divinity of the law. The fact that you do not understand it is a sign of the law's divinity. It was a few years later before I read The Guide of the Perplexed, and I discovered that Rambam makes mincemeat of the approach of that yeshiva boy. And says, these weak-minded people, it is as if humans were more perfect than God. Since humans say things that have some useful end, well, God does not do that. He commands us to do things that have no useful end for us, and he commands us not to do various things that would not harm us in any way. God forbid that we understand the Torah this way. It's impossible. Actually, it's the other way around. Of course, the Torah, the laws of the Torah, more than human laws, understand what it is that human beings need. They are all for the benefit of human beings. And in the third part of the Guide of the Perplexed, Rambam goes through the laws and tries to show the benefit for human beings from all of these laws, and he's extremely upset about this approach that says that these laws might not have a reason. Okay, so that's Rambam's approach in the Guide of the Perplexed, which goes along fairly well with what he saw him saying here in Hilchot Me'ilah, that we don't understand sometimes the reasons, but it's fitting for people to try to figure out what the reasons are for the laws of the Torah and to try to comprehend their full meaning to the extent of his ability. If it doesn't work, you shouldn't give up, shouldn't rebel against the system if that happens. But so all of that is well and good until we get to the story of the Kanzipor, the mitzvah in Deuteronomy chapter 22. If along the road you chance upon a bird's nest in any tree or on the ground with fledglings or eggs, and the mother sitting over the fledglings or on the eggs, do not take the mother together with her young. Let the mother go and take only the young, in order that you may fare well and have a long life. On the basis of this law, here's a in a certain sense, there's a tom given here. The reason you should observe this law is because if you do this, you will fare well and you will have a long life. But it isn't explained here why this is something good to do. It's just telling you the benefit that will accrue to you if you observe this law. Famous Mishnah says, "Ha'omer al kanzipor yagiu rachamecha v'al tov yizacher shmecha modim modim mishatkim oto." Only talk about the first phrase here. He who says in his prayers, "May your mercy extend to us the way that it extended to a bird's nest," is silenced. And the Gemara, in its discussion, says, "Al kanzipor yagiu rachamecha mai tama." Why is that not a good prayer? Why is that? And so, two rabbis in the land of Israel disagreed about the reason. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Abin, and Rabbi Yossi, the son of Zavida. One said, because it suggests that God gives preferential treatment to some, but not all of his creatures. The other said, because it explains God's laws, or perhaps God's attributes, osem midotav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as examples of mercy when they are really just decrees. The person who says this prayer is asking God to have mercy on us as he had mercy on the mother bird in the text in Devarim. And it's suggesting that the law in Sefer Devarim is because of the mercy that the Torah has on the mother bird. Okay, so that's what the Gemara says. And then Rambam writes in Hilchot Tfilah, people who say in their petitionary prayers, "May he who had mercy on a bird's nest that did not allow taking the mother and her young and did not allow the slaughter of a mother and her young on the same day have mercy on us." People like that who pray like that are silenced. Why? For these laws are decrees. They are not instances of mercy. Mipnesha mitzvot elu gezerat hakatuv hein ve'einan rachamim. Pretty strong statement from Rambam. And then he says, she'ilu hayu mipnei rachamim lo haya matir lanu shchita kol ikar. If you say that God has mercy on the birds, then how come you're allowed to slaughter a bird and to eat it? That doesn't make any sense. It looks almost as if Rambam here in this example here from Mishneh Torah is combining the two explanations here. He's giving preferential treatment to some but not all of his creatures, and also it explains God's laws as examples of mercy when they are really just decrees. So Rambam here is codifying something that seems to go against his world view, and I think that we are going to have to try to, solve this problem. I'm not sure that I'm going to solve this problem, but I think we're going to have to explore this problem a little further next week. We've set up that Rambam gave this impassioned speech about how important it is to try to find reasons for the mitzvot and how there's a sickness involved in saying that mitzvot do not have a reason for them. And here in his code of law, he codifies that we're not allowed to say prayers like this because it turns God's purposes into, it's claiming that God's purpose is mercy, and that isn't what this is about. This text isn't about mercy. It is just gzeirat hakatuv. It's just a gzeirah. Next week, we will see what Rambam says about this same text in the Moreh Nevuchim. This is what he says about the text here in the Mishneh Torah, in his Code of Law, but in his philosophic work, the Moreh Nevuchim, he also addresses this text, but we will see that only next